We love your calls. We love you getting involved and joining in the conversation with us. Wherever you might be listening to us, the ENS open lines 1300 736 736. Send us a temper text. Heaps of those coming through. We'll work our way through a lot of those this morning on 0433 98 11 16. Josh Jenkins is in the house with myself. JJ, good morning.
Good morning, Kane. Good morning to everyone tuning in and having a listen and joining us to kick off Australia Day. Looking forward to plenty happening. Looking forward to Brett Phillips, as always. He's been my twins have been playing up at night, so I've seen hardly any tennis after between 6 and 9pm. So BP's been my man, my eyes and ears. So looking forward to having a chat to him a little bit later this morning.
We'll definitely do that as it's getting towards the business end. And we've got an Aussie who is going to be almost impossible to beat, Ash Barty. So exciting. She'll play on Thursday for a spot in the final. You can have your say on any of that. It's time now, though, for our conversation starter, the Pope's Drip Ease, which makes drip irrigation a breeze. Talk some footy as the season starts to get a little bit closer and a little bit more serious for those players that are about to prepare themselves to do that. One of those is Geelong veteran Sean Higgins. He says JJ is extremely confident he can recapture the form that made him one of North Melbourne's prime movers as he looks to reclaim his place back in the Cats' best 22. Fascinating for, I don't know, you've got a game day role at the Cats and you just left. So I found the hardest thing when I joined the media was to talk about players that you just played with, like you just shared a locker room with Travis Boak or Robbie Gray, and then a few months later you're in the media trying to dissect and analyse their careers and how you think it's going to go. So I sympathise with you.
And I'm still employed there, Kane.
And that makes it even harder that you're still employed there. So we'll do some heavy lifting here this morning for you. Can Sean Higgins get into Geelong's best 22? Will be dependent on how they go. I mean, there comes a point when you're going to have to start to move towards youth. Now, he's closer to 34 than he's closer to 33, and he lost his place in the side. He wasn't able to influence the scoreboard forward of centre like he had done in the past at North Melbourne when he was at his absolute best, just kicked 4 goals last year. And I thought, for whatever reason, he's quite fumbly over the ball, which was very uncharacteristic because he's one of the more clean players at stoppage and at ground level that I've seen. So that was an issue for him. So it's going to be tough. I mean, anyone who gets to 34 years of age and you're under the spotlight because your team is aging and may look to need to get some young legs through that side, it's going to be really difficult for him, JJ. And every AFL player has to face that reality at some point.
Absolutely. I certainly went through it the past couple of years. I probably wouldn't have thought I'd have enjoyed my time at Geelong if you had said you were going to play 2 games. But that's just the way it goes. Every year you get to play over 30 is a bonus, isn't it? You just look at it as a bonus. Well, that's how I feel. You look at players 10, 11, 12 years younger, there's so many reasons to give them a go over someone who is 32, 33, 34 years of age. So Sean will have to deal with that, but he'll be given every opportunity to. He has been, I've only had limited dealings at the club. I've only probably attended 6 or 7 sessions, and I'm not really focused on what Sean's doing. I'm more focused on the young, tall guys, but he's looked quite good. He's been zipping around. He's looked a lot zippier this summer than he did last summer, so hopefully he's feeling a bit better and can rock and roll, because whether he plays 8 games or 18 games, he's still going to have some pretty important role. So we'll see how that one plays out.
He was good in the media on Dwayne's World last year as well, a regular on that show, and gives pretty honest, insightful views on the way the game's been played, and he's pretty honest about
he's very well aware of where he sits and his understanding of whether he's in or out of the team and what it looks like. So he's got a very level head on his shoulders. It's a very big head, but it's a very level head.
Hey, yesterday we just speculated on the back of Connor Rosie did some media at Port Adelaide, and he's out of contract. So, 12 months out or 9 months out from that expiring, players are often asked about that, even if, he's still got some time to work their way through. He said it's not a priority for him. We'll get to it at some point. And then we just sort of threw some numbers around on what he would be worth. And I said, well, he's worth 500 on what he's delivered, but there would be a club that would pay him 800. Our social media team, as they do, sort of posted that quote out there, and a lot of people couldn't believe that I thought Connor Rosie was worth 500 and that someone would pay him 8. He's absolutely worth 500. There's no doubt about it. The average wage is about
380.
Correct. So Nathan Buckley and the Herald Sun have quoted Bucks from "I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here" saying last night, essentially the average player earns 400. That is your average run-of-the-mill player earning 400. So Connor Rosie at 22 and what he's already delivered is every bit 500, and there'd be a club that would pay him 8. But it's a fascinating discussion about what players are worth, and I believe for a long time that player wages should be public because it's just so much more transparent than what we have at the moment and everyone guessing. But some of the big players, there's some big names out of contract coming up at the end of 2022. And we're talking Moore from Collingwood, we're talking Walsh, Ben King from Gold Coast, we think he's going to go, Jackson and Pickett from Melbourne, premiership players now, going to command big money, Isaac Heaney. But Patrick Dangerfield was on your podcast and his podcast, in fact, The Field, and he spoke about Sam Walsh, wasn't it? And what he would pay Sam Walsh. Let's have a listen.
What sort of an offer would you make to Sam Walsh to bring him back to Geelong?
10 years, 10 mil.
Excuse me?
I'd do that tomorrow.
Would he sign that?
You'd have to ask him.
But hit me in the face. But when you actually break it down and predict the growth of the game,
I do not think that is an outrageous offer for someone that he's going to be in. Here it is, but he's going to be in the picture as one of the best players in the game every year for the next 10 years. He's only 21.
10 years, 10 mil for Sam Walsh. Now, we thought the buddy deal would be a disaster. What was that, 10 mil for 9 years, I reckon?
Yeah.
At the time?
Maybe more.
It was around about that. It might have been, we don't know because they're not public, which is a conversation in itself. 0433981116. You're a rival club. You're Geelong. 10 years for 10 million. I can't stand long-term contracts. There is an exception for every player.
Mate.
Would you do that? If you were Sam Walsh and you were his management or you were his parent, pretty tough to knock back 10 million bucks.
I would do it if I was Geelong. Trying to lure him back to the surf coast.
What about if you were him?
I don't know that I would. I reckon you could nearly get... Oh, I think you could... I would not want to lock my... Look at Scottie Pippen. We saw the last dance when he needed the security, so he locked himself into a deal which 3, 4, 5 years down the track was just disgusting. But when you're locked in, you're locked in. I would take my chances if I was Walsh that... In 5 or 6 years, I could still sign a 4 or 5 year deal. And then we look at the CBA moving forward. We get out of this pandemic. The AFL, the game starts to make the money back that it's lost and we move forward. I would take the chance that 10 years, 10 million is unders.
I think I'd take it. I think to have that security, I'd take it. But what's Sam Walsh worth? So he's absolutely worth $1 million, and that's what the Carlton offer will be when that comes to that point. I don't know how they're going to afford it because of the money that they're paying other players, and Saad and Williams and Cripps and all these players, McGovern, Kerner, they're all on big money, so I'm not sure how they're quite going to afford it. But so there's what they're worth at their current club, and then there's what they're worth somewhere else, and there would be a club, you know, willing to pay Sam Walsh that 1.3, probably 1.4 million.
Wow, that's
the reality
a lot.
Of
that's
it.
Starting to...
It is, but that's, you know, you look at the offers at North Melbourne have had a crack at some players to get that they've been unsuccessful. You've got a walk-in captain who's going to play 350 games and he's hardly going to miss because he's so durable. There's definitely a club that would be willing to offer that sort of cash with the way that it's going. Darcy Moore's an interesting one, JJ, just working through some of the bigger out-of-contract players and how you see their worth that the average fan might sort of not know. He's a difficult one because he doesn't play much footy. He gets injured often, but there will be clubs that get sucked into his versatility and his flair and his run and his leadership ability off halfback. I reckon he's 900 at Collingwood, but I reckon he is.
Yeah, no, yep. I agree. I think he's certainly the one that you'd be pursuing before Jordan De Goey, no doubt about it. And, yeah, definitely. He's worth a lot of money. He's I don't know that he's as versatile as perhaps we think. I don't know that he could go forward for an entire season. It's easy to go. It's easy to be swung forward when defenses aren't really planning for you and have an impact. But it's different when you've got to play there. But the fact of the matter remains, when healthy, he is among the best two or three key backs in the game. The problem is, Kane, your best ability is your availability. And 100%. He hasn't been available as much as Collingwood fans would have liked.
And then the really difficult ones to value are the young players that haven't played a lot of footy or achieved much at all, like a Ben King. But the upside, and you're paying for potential, which is dangerous. We've seen it with Patton and Boyd and other key position players that haven't developed. But you'd think Ben King is going to be, you know, top five highest paid players in the game.
I pray he stays.
He's not staying. There's zero chance. I'm giving it zero.
I pray that he stays up there because fearful for the Gold Coast Suns if he leaves. It's that big for them that I pray that he stays up there.
And some of the other names, Jackson and Pickett and Heaney, all out of contract, and a couple of big ones at the Western Bulldogs as well. 0433 98 11 16, you can have your say on that. Teams are just finalising their lists at the moment, sort of last one or two spots. Sample star Jack Hayes is going to play for the Saints in 2022, according to SEN's Miles Fitzner. Now, the Saints haven't confirmed this news, but I'm not sure if you've seen much of him play, but I saw him play in the grand final against Glenelg. He's the best player in the sample by an absolute...
Is he a ruckman?
Yeah, well, he's not tall enough to be a ruckman.
Okay.
He's probably 194-ish.
Oh, so yeah,
he's not an AFL ruckman. He could pinch hit, but mobile big man is what I would call him, and just a class above everyone else that was playing
so
in the grand final.
That sounds good, but where's he going to play?
No, I don't know. Well, he's key position depth, isn't he? That's all.
Which
that's
end
all
of the ground?
Is. Well, he's more forward, but okay.
So he could be that sort of the backup break in case of emergency, key forward ruck backup.
Yeah. Pretty much. And he'd be 26-ish years of age. So if he hasn't sort of made it and had the opportunity by now, you sort of get what you're going to get. But handy depth player. Depth, deceptively clever irrigation made right here in Australia. Pope's Drip Ease will make it a breeze. What would you pay Sam Walsh to get him out of the Blues? Patrick Dangerfield has said on the Field podcast, $10 million for 10 years. We'd love your thoughts. We'd love for you to get involved. On the other side of this, we're going to talk about the two individuals that are changing tennis to the point where they kicked off the great Rafa Nadal, who's won 20 Grand Slam titles in a quarterfinal match on the main Channel 9 station for doubles yesterday. They kicked him off. The crowd was going nuts. We'll hear from Kokkinakis and Kyrgios and get your thoughts on the other side of this. This is Summer Breakfast with Kane Corns and Josh Jenkins.
Kogan, make the switch to a great value credit card. Visit koganmoney.com.au. Smarter, quieter, safer. Garage doors redefined. Discover more at 4ddoors.com.au. Summer Breakfast on SEN.
Hopefully Craig's watching and keeps us on this court. The rowdier the better from everyone, honestly. Sink, Pearson, and come here.
I'm not finished. I want to win this thing, to be honest, bro.
They were the scenes yesterday as Tanasi Kokkinakis and Nick Kyrgios won through to the semi-finals of the doubles. It's changing tennis. It's the changing the way that we view the doubles format in tennis and the team aspect of what is predominantly individual sport. And the Australian Open needed it, I reckon. We might speak to Brett Phillips about this because those individuals left in the Australian Open. I mean, there is Ash Barty, and from an Aussie point of view, that's going to captivate us all. But apart from that, there's none of the real characters and none of the real storylines left. It'd be a different story if Novak was allowed in. But did you watch any of it yesterday, JJ? And what's your view on the way that these two are going about it?
I saw some. I don't love it. I think there's a level of swearing that we don't need. There's a lot of kids watching and a lot of impressionable people watching. There's a level of that we don't need. But it is good to see something different in tennis. And I spoke to BP last week about, you know, why can players not cope with a little bit of noise and a little bit of crowd noise when they're serving and those sorts of things. And he didn't really satisfy me with his answer. So this is next level. This is not sustainable. It's just, you know, this won't happen at the other Grand Slams or the other tournaments around the world. And it'll be interesting to see how these two go when they encounter a little bit of, you know, bad luck or turmoil as a team, how they can come together. But it's good. It's good for something different.
I was captivated by it yesterday. In fact, my whole lounge room was. So it was my niece's first birthday. So I had Chad and Mum and the boys all just gathered around the TV watching it. And it just, I would never have watched more than 5 minutes of a doubles game at the Australian Open before. Like, not even the final of the doubles would I have watched. And there I am watching these two in a quarterfinal of the doubles, just gripped by every shot, and the crowd's going nuts. So I'm all in on it. I just wish, and I don't want to go down this path again, I wish Nick would have the same competitiveness and the same, you know, speak after he won there, that he wants to win the whole thing to put into his own tennis. But anyway, that's not going to happen. Nick Kyrgios, you are the entertainer, and even more pleasing, you have made Kane Corns look like a bigger goose than he already is. Corns, don't you ever get sick and tired of making a dead set clown out of yourself. I'm not sure what I've made a clown out of myself in regards to Nick Kyrgios. I reckon I've sort of been spot on with his lack of achievements at Grand Slam level in the doubles. But I'm admitting I'm absolutely all in on this. Was anyone there, though? That's what I want to hear. Were you on court? Were you in the crowd? And are you a normal tennis watcher? Or have you just gone to watch these two play tennis? The thing that I think probably crosses the line, and I had some sympathy for their opponents yesterday. So when there's a fault, like you never usually cheer a double fault.
No.
They're cheering fault, like single first service faults, they're cheering. The crowd's going off. And Kyrgios is like trying to get the crowd up after a fault. So I did have some sympathy for their opposition yesterday, but I think it is good for the game.
I think so. That's the beauty of home court advantage, isn't it? We've got a text here, no name attached, but The crowd was making noise when the opponents are serving. It's like cheating. I mean, come on. Seriously. I wasn't complaining when Port fans were just screaming at my ancestors when I was having a set shot for goal. I mean, it's not that bad, is it?
No, I don't think it is, but there's some unwritten rules in sports, and there's sporting etiquette. Like you would never go and watch Tiger at the Masters and in the backswing of his putt, yell out at him. You wouldn't do it. Now, whether that's right or wrong, it's just the way things have been done, and there's sporting etiquette. There is etiquette in tennis that as the ball goes up for a serve and the ball toss goes up, you're not going to squeal and make noise. It's just not the way the things have been done. This is changing that. I understand it. What's your view on it, though? I'm interested in your thoughts. Would love for you to join in the conversation. 1-300-736-736. JJ, you are absolutely correct. It was over the top rubbish. Kyrgios has no sense of time and place. Language was disgraceful. In hindsight, the language on court, you know, with kids in the crowd and a lot of kids watching on TV wasn't the time
he
and the
won't.
Place.
Yeah, he won't. I don't think hindsight will pull him up on that. He'll go with it, but I think we can all accept that there's just probably no need. You can still be, get your point across and have the level of emphasis without the swearing. I would think that's where I'd probably sit on this. A former teammate of mine, Tom Duday, who's a very well-spoken young man, he's tweeted, potentially unpopular opinion: tennis crowds should be allowed to be as loud as they want, even during play. Like in basically every other sport. No more quiet, please. Let them get as rowdy as they want. Now, I'm pretty much in that corner. I could bow to the fact that the serve is sacrosanct, same as the backswing in golf. But apart from that, go your hardest. Make it a spectacle. Make it an atmosphere. Make people want to turn up. Maybe that's the answer to doubles tennis. Maybe that's why it's not popular. Maybe this is the way it can become popular.
Yeah, no, I'm more on that side than the other with you. I guess it just brings in the home crowd advantage really significantly as well, and whether that's fair. So they're not going to be, you know, trying to put Kyrgios off in his first serve, whether that's fair. But you're right, in baseball, I mean, baseball is pretty similar to tennis in terms of the hand-eye and what's required. You can scream however loud you want when the batter is up and trying to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. So it's just something, and there are some etiquette in sport that's just the way things have been done and the way things that have always been done. You can have your say on that. 1-300-736-736. Madison Keys has said some interesting things about her mindset with tennis. She said that her mindset change, it's been a big one, is just to enjoy the tennis, take some of that internal pressure off herself. It was honestly freezing me. I felt like I couldn't play at all, just taking that away and putting tennis into perspective. This is a sport, something that I loved when I was little. It does get all consuming. It ended me. It ended me. The mind game of sport ended my career, really. I woke up on game day and couldn't wait for it to be over. That sick feeling in your stomach when you wake up and the pressure that you put on yourself seems ridiculous now. Did it get you, JJ, or did you have a teammate? Like Dangerfield for me seems as though somebody just can take all that pressure off himself and not worry about things, and you get the longevity as a result and the better performance.
I was able to rid myself of that stress of performance, but that led me to believe that perhaps I didn't have the hunger to be as good as I needed to be anymore. Mm. Led me to, you know, I didn't quite have that competitiveness that I needed to play. So you do hear a lot of athletes across the world and sports psychologists and that talk about the fun and the joy in sport and the need to be able to create that, but it's hard. It's because it's, you want to have fun, but you have fun by winning. You always have fun when you're winning. You almost always have fun when you are winning. So you can't have one without the other. But which one comes first to allow the other one to follow? It's the never-ending conversation inside professional sporting clubs and, I guess, with individual sports stars as to how do I have fun which will allow me to win, or do I just win first and then I'll have fun?
Yesterday on the show, we spoke about some rules that need changing in tennis. After the 7:30 news headlines, we're going to hear from Denis Shapovalov, who was really upset with some of the antics of Rafa Nadal yesterday. We'll hear from him after the 7:30 news headlines. Temper Text is busy out there. We'll go through a few of those and your thoughts on sporting etiquette and why crowds at the tennis need to be quiet. Speaking of the tennis, there was a big quarterfinal matchup yesterday. Went to five sets. Rafa Nadal eventually getting the better of Denis Shapovalov, who wasn't happy, firstly, on court with the treatment or the lack of discipline towards Rafa on some of the tactics he was using. Let's have a listen.
He's not ready to play. Oh, you're not ready to play either because you come to talk to me. You come to talk to me.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
You guys are all corrupt. You guys are all corrupt.
Hard to hear, but you can hear the last couple of times where... Imagine if there'd have to be a punishment.
There'll be a letter coming with a blank check. Just sign your name here for $50,000, I would think.
But then he went again in his post-match media conference.
So, Denis, do you feel like he gets preferential treatment because of who he is?
Of course, 100% he does, 100%. I mean, every other match that I've played, the pace has been so quick, because the rest have been on the clock after every single point. And this one, I mean, after the first two sets, it was like an hour and a half, just because it's dragged out so much after every single point. I mean, he's given so much time, you know, and in between sets and all this, I mean, it's dragged out. I literally, for the same reason, I wasn't allowed to go to the washroom last year at the Australian Open because I had called a medical. And I'm not arguing the fact that he had a medical or whatever it is, you know, but how can you get evaluated medically and have a toilet break at the same break, you know, and just causing so much delay in the game? I mean, it's not balanced, you know?
Strong words. I mean, I think they would have been more impactful if he had won the match.
Yeah, which shouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be. Because I understand where he's coming from. The reality is the superstars of any sport, they get away with more, they get given more, they get more benefits. It's just the way it goes. It's human nature, I guess.
There's no doubt about that.
But I feel for him.
There's no doubt about that. You look at our game and, for example, the free kicks that are dished out to the better players and the superstars that wouldn't be if it was just your average player, the Brownlow medal votes that just go to the big names that perhaps the lesser lights who aren't in the spotlight as much wouldn't get. So is that just the way it is, and should it be that way? Now, they've definitely cracked down on Rafa. Like, he used to be ridiculous with how long he took between service points, and his games would go for so long. So they've cracked down. But, I mean, Kyrgios has been outspoken about Nadal for years now, about the tactics and the lack of treatment that he gets. And now Dennis has had a crack. Pretty brave of a 22-year-old to say that after he lost yesterday. It was an epic matchup.